The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Thank Godzilla. It's Friday. It's Friday. And that means it's Godzilla. My name is William Bibbiani. I am a critic. I write for The Wrap. Everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I am a senior staff writer over at Slash Film. I write a lot about Star Trek.
Yes.
This isn't our Star Trek podcast.
No, it is. Because this is the episode of Godzilla where Godzilla has to go back in time. And Godzilla can't save Mothra or else the future is doomed. And so Anguirus has to, hey man, why didn't you save Mothra? You just got run over by King Ghidorah on a truck. And he's like, I'm so sad. Harlan Ellison wrote this one.
I am the Gigantardian of forever.
Nice. We're referring to the classics.
The Gardegigan of forever. I ain't got it.
I think you had it the first time. We're referring to the classic Star Trek episode, City on the Edge of Forever, because this week on Thank Godzilla, It's Friday, we're talking about the second film in the anime Godzilla trilogy. We previously reviewed Godzilla Planet of the Monsters, now we're reviewing Godzilla City on the Edge of Battle.
City on the Edge of Battle.
Yes, which makes it sound a little indecisive. Like, we're on the edge. We're not sure about this whole battle thing.
And there is a battle.
Oh, quite a bit.
It's Godzilla versus a city.
Yeah, an actual city.
Well,
it's a little complicated, actually.
To give a recap, in Planet of the Monsters,
yes,
humanity left Earth because monsters were getting to be too much of a hassle.
Yeah, specifically Godzilla, who was not only destroying all the humans, but was also destroying all the other monsters, just kind of taking over the planet, and humanity, along with two alien species that had also been on the verge of extinction, one of which was a group of religious zealots, and the other one were more like sort of warriors of pure logic. They all took all the human survivors they could find, got in a spaceship, and they went to try to find a new place to live, like Battlestar Galactica.
They searched around for 20 years.
Yes, and couldn't find anything.
Well, given the vastness of space, that's not a lot of time.
Granted.
They never say how fast the ship was going.
Well, it's clear that it was faster than light, because when they finally say, listen, we only know one planet that's we can live on, and it's Earth.
So they go back to Earth.
Yeah, and they think that because they've been traveling faster than the speed of light, that a few thousand years have passed. But what they discover is that 20,000 years have passed, and Earth is a very different place.
Yeah. And they land on Earth. They find it's completely overgrown. Nature has taken back Earth. There's monsters everywhere, and there's Godzilla. And they get in their little, cool little, dogfighter space pods, and they fly down to the planet, and they shoot at Godzilla, and they blow it up, and they kill Godzilla.
Yeah, there's our hero is Haruo Sakaki, and he wants to kill Godzilla, even though a lot of other people are kind of iffy on that prospect. Either they're afraid, or they just think it's a bad idea, and they just want to flee. But he rises through the ranks over the course of that film, takes control over all of the forces that have landed on Earth, and leads a successful fight against Godzilla. They kill Godzilla. Holy shit. This is great.
But then there's a twist, you see.
Yes, because it turns out that was a baby Godzilla.
Yeah, it turns out that the Godzilla we all know and love has stayed alive on Earth for 20,000 years.
Kept getting bigger the whole time.
And has continued to grow and is now literally the size of a mountain. And they don't know what to do with that.
And Godzilla attacked at the end of the last movie, and it wasn't sure who among the cast survived, except for Haruo, because at the end of the credits sequence, we saw that he had survived and had been taken in by human beings who had somehow survived this whole time. And that's where we are today.
And so, we catch up right where we left off. No, not a lot of time has passed. Yeah. And we actually start in space, and they are scanning Godzilla. Godzilla's 300 meters tall.
Yeah, it's basically catching everyone up in case you haven't seen the other movie recently.
I did love the bit where they said if Godzilla were to, like, breathe his nuclear breath, he'd hit us, right? Like, yeah, we're in space, but he could still get us.
Yeah, like, at that size, yeah, it'd be a hell of a shot, though.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we'd be able to dodge, right?
He couldn't see us, maybe? So, yeah, also, how fast does that beam go? It's going to take a long time for it to reach them.
Yeah, and it takes a long time for it to charge, so they'd probably be able to move out of the way, I think. But it's a concern. I'll grant you. There's going to come a point, let's say they don't defeat Godzilla. And Godzilla just stays on Earth and keeps growing and growing and growing. There's kind of come a point where his head's going to, like, poke out over the ozone. And he's just going to be like, hey, what's going on out here?
Out of the atmosphere.
Yeah. Sees the moon, decides to try to kill it. let's get that fucking thing.
I don't think
he's taking a pot shot at it at least once out of boredom.
I mean, Godzilla is a pretty extraordinary being. We don't know if Godzilla could operate in a vacuum. Probably not.
But who can fucking say? He's really immortal in this one.
That's true.
He's really especially unstoppable in this series of films. So we catch up with the spaceship that's orbiting Earth, and they say, if we haven't found any evidence of survivors of that Godzilla attack in 48 hours, we're going to fuck off.
Yeah.
So there's a ticking clock. We then go down to the surface where Haruo is. He awakens, and he's on, like, a shack hanging off of a cliff. Which would freak me the fuck out. Like, that would just be the absolute, like, nope. I'm not moving for the rest of my life. I will die here. But he climbs out, and he discovers that the person who saved him is a young girl. She has been living on this planet. She's not alone. There is a whole civilization. And also, she has an identical twin. So we know what we're doing here.
We know what we're doing, and they worship a deity
It's a big egg.
All right.
We just couldn't fucking resist. We couldn't have one fucking.
Here's the thing. There's two monsters, like main monsters in this movie. There's Godzilla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in the last movie, we had this cool sci-fi concept. What if we left Godzilla alone for 20,000 years? Mm. He didn't die, and he just got bigger and bigger. Now we have mountain-sized Godzilla. A new wrinkle for the series.
Yeah, Godzilla is a threat to the whole planet.
A little bit of a change in the concept, which I liked.
And they'll go into more detail about how that works in this movie. I want to talk about it, because I think it's neat.
And there's also, and we'll get to it, Mechagodzilla in this movie in a certain form.
Sort of. Yeah.
But point being, we see what happened to Mechagodzilla after 20,000 years.
Yes.
Mothra is the same.
Mothra is a fucking egg.
Mothra is an egg being worshipped by twins.
I suppose it could hatch and be a different Mothra. Like, it absorbed a whole bunch of Godzilla radiation and now it's a Godzilla. I don't know. There's things you could do.
Yeah.
But we're still just kind of just doing Mothra at this point. We're introducing all the elements like we normally would. The big difference is that, it's not on Infinite Island, but it gives a shit. And
we don't know that. It could be Infinite Island in the future.
They're not making a thing out of it. I'm pretty sure Godzilla would, like, just walk past Infinite Island in a couple of minutes. The way the size he is now, so I don't think they're on Infinite Island. But in any case, they're also the twins in all the other Mothra stories and Godzilla stories where Mothra appears are like the size of a Barbie doll. Hmm. Here they're human sized.
Yeah,
And they're also badass because they have
because they have the same sort of like hair and facial markings as the sort of the long-lost locals from the Disney film Atlantis, The Lost Empire.
It does have that vibe. Yeah. It definitely has that vibe. I wonder if that was an influence, actually. I don't know. But, they have... they're covered in, like patterns of, like, a chalky dust, and they... When Haruo quickly finds other humans who have survived, they're found by this local tribe, and they're brought into their underground kingdom. Hey, it's the underground kingdom for you and for me, and it's fun. Five people got that. You're welcome. But they go down into the Underground Kingdom and they learn more about this civilization. And there's talks about how, oh yeah, sure, they survived. They learned how to survive in this atmosphere, but look at their technology. This isn't evolution. It's very classist.
Isn't it like the warmongering aliens who make that observation,
yeah,
though?
Yeah. 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 They're the ones who like want to like evolve into like pure logic and consciousness. So it makes sense, but it is very judgy. And we see some things about their civilization. The powder that they cover themselves with has some sort of like interesting biological component. And one of the scientists who has survived, postulates that they're not just human. In fact, they may also be evolved from some sort of insect.
Oh, interesting. I don't think I remember that part.
Yeah, no. I don't know. Did you watch the dub or did you watch
the... I watched the dub.
Okay, yeah. I watched the subtitle one. Maybe it goes into more detail. I can't speak to the dub. But they said, like, maybe they're not strictly human. I mean, they wouldn't be after, like, 20,000 years. They might be genetically somewhat different. But they might be significantly different. And it's possible that the radiation from Godzilla has also led to other mutations. One thing that they talk about in this film... And we got into it a little bit last time, is that the planet, when they got there, had a lot of very unusual flora and fauna, had a lot of like little kind of baby Godzilla-type monsters with wings.
Yeah.
The plants are now like razor sharp and like rocks. And what they point out, and I think this is a neat idea, is that humanity left and Godzilla became the sort of undisputed top of the food chain for the entire planet, not just the... a place where it lives. It lives everywhere. It's huge. And in 20,000 years, Earth evolved around Godzilla. Everything had to evolve in order to survive with Godzilla, in order to benefit Godzilla. And as a result, all of the plant life and all of the animal life is more Godzilla-like.
Yeah.
And I think that's neat. I think that opens up a lot of can of worms. This is one of those things where it's like, I feel like there's so much more. I know we have three films, and they're very plot-centric. I would love to explore that more. I think that's a really cool concept, you know? A whole Godzilla planet.
I feel like these movies are a little too high-octane for their own good, even when there's not a lot of action. I feel like everybody's... Like, there's a little bit too much propulsive motion. There's not a lot of time to stop and really ponder and appreciate. There aren't
sequences. In the middle, there seems to be in this one. There's definitely a lot of downtime and exposition in the middle, but we always get to the climax.
I'm talking about exposition. What I'm talking about is I would like to have had more shots of them just sort of wandering the woods without any dialogue.
Yeah, that's something you see in... A lot of anime filmmakers are able to make more time for that. Studio Ghibli is quite famous for that.
Yeah, like here's a shot of a stream, and we just kind of look at it for
a minute. Or here's a shot of characters doing something that doesn't add to the plot at all and adds to the sense of place and texture.
Yeah, they're cooking or something.
Little details that add up over time.
And I think it's just a result of this film's animation design, which I complained about last week.
Yeah.
I don't think the character animation is very dynamic. It's really kind of stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good when you're dealing with like action or spacecraft or even monsters like Godzilla's.
Yeah, it's some cool looking stuff in this movie, I think.
But there's nothing that feels like lush or organic. It all feels very mechanical.
Well, to be fair, the planet is less lush and organic.
Well, especially when we finally get to the city.
That's true. So let's. I'm trying to make sure I don't forget anything in the middle. They interact with the twin civilization. The twins have psychic abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also learning English or Spanish or whatever people... Actually, because it's everyone's language.
Oh.
So, like, the aliens hear their own language. The characters hear their own language. But they're starting to learn to speak what the humans are speaking. And they're starting to become more interested in Haruo, like, specifically as a person. There's, like, a scene later on where Haruo and... what's the girl's name? The one who pilots the
mech. I forgot her name. The one that, like, looks like she's about to be a love interest.
And indeed, she is later on. They actually do kiss. It's Yuko.
Yuko.
Yuko. She's been piloting a mech the whole time, and she was... she's a little younger than Haruo, and she doesn't, even though she fled Earth, she doesn't remember it. And he's been like very protective of her. I always kind of got like a more of a brother-sister vibe, but apparently we're at a kissy phase. So we're doing the kissy. And they kiss, and the twins, from like a distance, are watching and going, the fuck? And I don't know if they're like weirded out by kissing, if that's not something maybe their culture does, or if they wanted to kiss Haruo, or they wanted to kiss Yuko. I don't know.
I thought they didn't recognize that kind of behavior. Maybe they don't even reproduce sexually anymore.
Who can say? Yeah.
They don't talk about
that. I doubt we're going to get there.
No.
It doesn't seem like a thing we're going to do. So there's that. But yeah, they also discover that they get in like a... One of the characters steps into basically a Sarlacc pit, like a big pit of biological angry monster. And the twins help kill it, or at least save her, using arrows that are incredibly powerful arrows that can like cut through anything. And the alien species, what are they called? They're the Borom, the guys. You know those guys.
The which one are you talking about?
No, not the Exif, but the other aliens, the ones who are believe in like the pure logic and stuff. They're called
The Billa Saludo.
Billa Saludo. It was a little long. I knew I'd mess up a syllable if I just tried to guess it. The Billa Saludo. They recognize the metal that they've been mining. Mm. The metal is called nanometal, and it's what they used before they fled Earth to create Mechagodzilla. And nanometal isn't just a cool metal. It's not like adamantium where it's just really, really solid. No, it's a nanotech metal.
Mm.
And it has the ability to take over other matter. And it has the ability to heal itself when it's like damaged. And it has the ability to grow. And over the last 20,000 years, it's grown a lot. So what they do is they talk to the twins and they try to find out where it is. And when they find it, they're taken through a big cave. They talk a bit about exposition stuff. And then, and here's where all the metal is. And it's a city.
It's a whole city.
Mechagodzilla, who does not show up in this movie as Mechagodzilla, has instead evolved into a city.
They explained that 20,000 years ago, they built Mechagodzilla and it was destroyed.
Yeah.
But a piece of its head was just sort of left on Earth. They didn't, like, salvage Mechagodzilla and leave Earth with
it. No, they had to flee too quickly for that. Yeah.
And because it was made of this, like, kind of living organic metal.
This T-1000 type stuff, yeah.
And it, like, was able to, I guess, self-replicate and grow. Yeah, it has spread out across the entire landscape and now turned into this big high-tech city.
Yeah.
And because
there's a big old helicopter outside my window. You can probably hear that. Okay.
And because they were able to, like... It takes the same password. Like, a computer monitor.
No one's changed it.
Yeah.
Although it would suck if we didn't write it down.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
wait.
Oh, God. Oh, well...
Which of these letters is capital?
It's okay. We'll send it to my email. Gmail doesn't exist anymore. What are we doing here? Oh, man. So...
text me that 6-digit code.
But it evolved, and it evolved into structures that it was familiar with, and it evolved to create a defense against Godzilla. It is exuding a mist that shields it from Godzilla. So Godzilla's never been able to find this thing to destroy it. So they don't have Mechagodzilla, but they have a city of magic metal, and the metal can be programmed to make anything they want, like weapons that can kill Godzilla.
And they make a new version of Mechagodzilla out of the metal that they call the Vulture.
And it's not really Mechagodzilla, it's a mech suit with wings, and they make a big deal out of it, and it's like Yuko, who is the mech pilot, she's gonna pilot this thing, and it's like, okay, and this is great, it's this coolest mech we've ever had, it's gonna be capable of fighting Godzilla, and they announce, and we're going to call it, and I'm thinking to myself, you're gonna call it Jet Jaguar. You're going to call it Jet Jaguar. You're going to call it Jet Jaguar.
No,
and then
they say,
we're going to call it the Vulture. And I'm like,
why?
You fuckers, it's right there. Why would you do that? It would be like if you made like a Batman movie and it was like, yes, and here is the person who's currently leading crime in all of Gotham. King Clown. Joker. Just call him Joker. We know what you're doing. It's weird that you're not calling him that. You're just, why? No one's going to give a shit about a vulture. Just call it Chet Jaguar.
It's a
you have
thing.
A robot already in here. This thing has no personality of its own. It would have more if you connected it to the past like you did a whole bunch of other stuff.
I'm wondering how popular Jet Jaguar is to Godzilla fans around the world.
I know that they've brought him back, I think, in some cartoon show.
I think so, but yeah. I feel like Jet Jaguar is like one of those characters people like because it's so stupid. Jet Jaguar doesn't have the most dignified start.
That's true.
And we like watching Godzilla versus Megalon because it's kind of stupid.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, you know, it is part of the canon. It is part of the mythology. And, I mean, let's be honest here. They're playing fast and loose with a lot of it, aren't they?
Yeah.
So why not mix it up? I was thinking about this as I was watching these movies and watching how, you know, it's a Godzilla movie, but they're really playing with it.
Mm-hmm.
They're really not doing a Godzilla story that we've done before, the whole 20,000 years thing. And I love it when, like, a movie can take this kind of iconography and do something very different with it.
Mm.
And I think about how there's going to come a day when we're a lot less precious about canon. And we're going to see, like, some kind of movie, when these things are in the public domain for a while, where it's like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, but someone's going to turn it into like a murder mystery where yeah. Superman is a private detective in a trench coat and Batman is an actual bat, and people won't give a shit the yeah, way that they don't give a shit when like you play with the iconography of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we can mess with that. I mean, it's weird.
Enough,
you know,
time has to pass. I think being in the public domain is a big part of that.
Yeah.
You know, people get really up in arms if you change a single. I remember when during the YA phase of the mid-2000s that people were furious whenever the slightest detail was changed from the original book.
I remember getting into. I actually hadn't read it yet or even watched the movies, but I knew someone who was furious that in the third Harry Potter movie, the Dementors, those like scary kind of Grim Reaper looking kind of guys, yeah. And they like, you know, they're like, in the movie, they fly.
Yeah.
And I knew someone who was pissed about that, because no!
Because they don't fly in the
They
book.
Don't fly! They're just scary guys in hoods. And I'm like, what difference does that? Does it make a difference? It might. Maybe there's some part of the book where that's important.
Yeah.
Having actually, you know, I eventually did read them. No! Who gives a shit? It's a made-up monster. Who cares?
But, you know, at the same time, they're making these new Alice in Wonderland movies and changing every single detail about Lewis Carroll's text. And nobody cared about that.
Yeah, because we're taking that for granted because it's so old. Mm. But because it's something that, like, we're growing up with. It's like and what's weird is that Batman and Superman and we're getting to the point where, like, Spider-Man and the X-Men and all these characters, they are that old.
Yeah.
But they keep getting recycled for each new generation, so they still feel contemporary.
There's like 100 versions of Batman at this point. We saw an animated Batman Christmas movie last year where it was completely new style, new premise. Like, everything was different in that one.
Yeah, and nothing was harmed.
Yeah.
It wasn't that good, but it was kind of interesting, and it didn't ruin Batman, that's for goddamn sure. No, so
I don't think you can anymore.
I think it'd be very, very difficult to do. So I'm fine with changing these things, but I also feel like when it comes to stuff like Jet Jaguar, you can sort of bring that back. I mean, think about how for a long time, and this isn't quite the same thing, but like one of like the silliest things ever in a Spider-Man comic was the Spider-Mobile. When he briefly got himself
a dune buggy. Yeah.
Yeah, he got himself his own like Batmobile, but for Spider-Man. And it was a joke. It was ridiculous. No one took it seriously. It was a one-off thing, and it was this thing where every once in a while in Wizard, the Guide to Comics, they would talk about the most embarrassing superhero moments, and it would be like Spider-Man gets the Spider-Mobile.
Hmm.
And now, the Spider-Mobile is a character. There is actually, if you look in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse and in the comics as well, a character in a sort of like the Cars universe, but like there's a Spider-Man
like
in that universe.
A living Spider-Man car.
Yeah, and do you know what its name is?
It's Peter Parked Car.
Peter Parked Car. I love that.
Oh, man.
So I feel like if we can get a Peter Parked Car, surely we can name a mech suit Jet Jaguar.
That's fair. I'm also okay with them inventing new stuff.
I would be fine.
It's a big mech suit made of Mechagodzilla metal.
If it had its own personality or something, I would say fine, but they just named like a mech suit whatever.
Now, remember in the Millennium Era, they called Mechagodzilla Kiryu.
Yeah, it had its own vibe as well, but then the American title. I don't know, that might be an issue of translation as well, but in any case... So they go to the city, and now they're going to try to build up the city and build its defenses, and their plan is the same. We're going to lure Godzilla, the big one, into a trap, and we're going to basically lure it into a canyon, and we're going to fill the canyon with this nanometal and kind of hold it in place, and then we're going to shoot out its dorsal fin, because that's his shield generator, and then we're going to impale him with harpoons... that will set off an EMP inside of him and make him explode.
Yeah, underneath the rocky skin.
Yeah. It worked before on the smaller one, and it'll work before on the big one, because now we can make the tech we need to do it.
Yeah.
This takes time, so we have some downtime, and we have a lot of plot that gets covered here, in addition to Haruo's sort of romantic adventure. He's lost. He's starting to lose confidence. He's starting to lose his focus. And he talks to Metphius, the Exif sort of politician priest, who is there as well. And I'm sure this is important later, but Metphius is using the Mechagodzilla technology to repair an ancient artifact from his culture that has been unusable for many, many years. But now they have the tech to do it. Also, we find out, and I don't know if this is going to be important later, his priests, cultists, whatever you want to call them, they have, an iPhone app that sends them prophecies from God. It's like, oh, well, we should leave Earth.
And it's a fun way to put it. Yeah, they got a little widget that they use for prayer, and they get prophecies from it.
They're about to, the ship in orbit is about to leave, and they're like, yep, no, we couldn't find them. I guess we're going to go. And then one of the exes says, actually, I just got a prophecy alert, and it says we should stay. And then, 5 minutes later, they get a distress call from Earth, and their guys are there. So, whatever.
I always assumed it was, future predicting technology.
They treat it like it's a religious thing.
Yeah. That's true. Could very well just be divine.
Yeah. Or they're in their eyes, there's little difference, and this will be relevant later. Haruo also talks to Metphius about how Metphius's society was destroyed by monsters and how it is apparently not uncommon for species throughout the universe, when they become sufficiently evolved, to accidentally raise giant monsters that destroy them. It's like when Galactus shows up to your planet. It's like, oh, I guess we're ripe.
This happens a lot in, I think of Star Trek in this regard, where there's a delineating line that a civilization can cross in Star Trek. Where before they cross this line, they're not developed, and after they cross it, they are.
In Star Trek, it's able to travel faster than light.
It's faster than light travel, because now you can go out into space, travel faster than light.
You will find someone else. You're inevitably
going to meet aliens, so now you're part of this new community. Mm. So they're very careful about not making contact with species that haven't developed it yet, and waiting until they have before they initiate first contact.
Yeah.
But that rule is predicated on this kind of notion we take for granted that this is something everybody's going to inevitably do.
Right.
That all civilizations are developing in a very parallel fashion.
Well,
they're going to invent this thing.
There's actually a theory that they talk about in the original series, and they kind of drop it by the time they get to Next Generation. But it kind of explains why they keep going to planets where everyone's human and everything looks like a soundstage at the back of the Paramount lot. But yeah, no, there's a theory of parallel development that civilized, intelligent beings will evolve in similar patterns over time. You'll go through a Bronze Age, you'll go through a technological age, you'll have societies that rise and fall in sort of similar fashions. And there's some logic to that. There would probably be... some parallel if the species was genetically similar enough that their needs were the same.
Or maybe we're not imaginative enough think of a species developing differently from us.
Hey, I'm always about it making it weirder. I'm just saying I can see there's a teensy bit of logic there, but it's clearly a justification for why all the planets look the same.
But, you know, we're many decades into the Godzilla series at this point.
Oh,
so
we're over 50.
We need to just sort of take for granted now that monsters will appear.
Yeah.
That's just kind of an inevitable part of the Earth at this point.
But they're making it a plot point here, and Haruo even asks Metfius, like, hey, who was your monster? Mm. Like, who blew up your planet?
And they, it's so insufferable. They tease it out. It says, oh, I don't want to ever speak his name. Well, they say, I'll whisper it to you.
Yeah, we never say its name. Its name is too powerful. It's Voldemort. But you should know. Because you should know that there's something out there that's scarier than Godzilla, and it will make Godzilla seem less scary to you.
It's King Ghidorah.
It's King Ghidorah. He whispers it in his ear, and then in the post-credit sequence, we go back to that conversation, and we hear, it's Ghidorah. And it's like, we knew.
Yeah.
It's
as obvious as the Mothra thing. We know.
Yeah, I didn't think it was like...
And
it kind of would have been cool if it was Gigan. Like, that's the only one that would have been plausible, I suppose. Like, maybe Gigan. Gigan would have been fun with it.
It's not Mondo.
We know. We also would have been cool. But, like, no.
That would have been a great deal. The biggest twist would it's Manila. Like, what does Manila look like after 20,000? No, it's been 200,000 years with Manila. Manila is now like Omnicron, like just planet that eats people.
Love it.
It was Omnicron, right? Or no, Unicron.
Unicron was the name of the Transformers planet.
That was the Transformers. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
I just pissed off some Transformers fans.
Omnicron is something. It's some kind of...
Omnicron, it has got to be.
I'm going to look that up. I feel like it's got to be from some kind of pop culture thing, and I'm just blanking on it. Omnicron.
But not to give anything away, but we're going to fast forward a little bit for the next movie, and we are going to see... 20,000-year-old King Ghidorah.
I assumed we would.
What happened to Ghidorah in that time? So that's the big monster in the next movie.
The only thing that comes up is the Omicron variant of COVID.
That's not what I was referring to.
No, it is absolutely not. I feel like there is something, but whatever. It's got
to
be in GoBots or something.
I was referring to Unicron.
I know you were.
Omnicron.
Anyway.
If people are dieting now more than ever before... then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
So that's going on, and that's a whole thing. And the other big thing, and this is a huge plot point, is I'm blanking on the name. What's the name of the other alien species again?
The Billisaludo.
The Billisaludo. Mechagodzilla was their creation, and this nanometal was their creation. And what we discover is that much like the Exif have their own sort of religious cult thing, and we haven't really gotten into a whole lot of detail about exactly how that works, the Billisaludo have that as well, and they worship this nanometal. So they have found the thing that they're looking for, and Metfius tells our hero, you got to keep an eye on these guys because they don't just like this metal. They want to become this metal.
They want to become Borgs, essentially.
Yeah, they want to become Borgs. They want to become a monster. They believe that the monsters that arise and destroy our civilizations are the next level. They're the gods. They're the things that are the most powerful. And they want to become more like them. This is where they talk about how the rest of the planet became more like Godzilla. Why wouldn't we want to as well? Mm-hmm. So, those aliens...
And that's another concept I wish they had rolled with.
Yeah.
It's a neat idea. There's a lot of big ideas that they just kind of put into an action movie context.
It's a little... I mean, even though there's three movies, it's a little rushed. And again, this was originally planned as a TV series. I don't know how long the TV series would have been.
Hmm.
I would hope longer than this so we could have really gotten into some of these ideas, because we're getting to a point where it's like, hey, what if Godzilla fought Tetsuo the Iron Man? And I'm like, fucking awesome. I want to see that. Yes, please. That's really cool. But they start like merging their bodies and their consciousness with this computer. And the humans are shocked and grossed out by this. And honestly, again, a little judgy, because they're not... At least at first, they're not forcing the humans to do it. They're doing it by choice. And they even say, we're doing it because it'll be more efficient to control Mechagodzilla City so that we can defeat Godzilla, which is what you wanted. So why are you being judgmental dicks about this? And to a point, they're right. But later in the film, we'll realize, no, they're dicks about it. While we're having this argument, plot point... Godzilla wakes up. He's been dormant for a while.
I mean, we knew it was coming.
It had to be, right? It'd be weird if we got through this whole movie and Godzilla never did anything. Godzilla wakes up, and he doesn't seem happy about something. And we discover that when the Bellasaluto have uploaded themselves into the nanometal, they have been making choices about what to prioritize. Do we build the heat shield so when Godzilla attacks, we're safer? Do we build the weapons? And what they decided was... They decided to deprioritize the cloaking mechanism that prevented Godzilla from seeing them.
Well, which is not a great plan.
I
think it was like arrogant. It's like, we have control of this now. We can take on Godzilla easy. So yeah, we'll take the shield down. Godzilla come over, but we'll be all
right. And they are trying to build the things to destroy Godzilla, and this will make it faster. So they took a calculated risk. You can maybe make that argument. But in any case, Godzilla wakes up. And it can tell that this, like, city exists now.
Yeah.
Because reasons. And he charges...
Well, we know about monster instincts. Yeah. They just sort of drift toward each other.
He charges up his heat blast, and they throw out, like, a big nanobot wave that kind of
it's like deflects a big cloud. It. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Godzilla's like, okay, well, that won't work. So Godzilla starts trudging towards Mechagodzilla. And they're like, oh, shit. Do we have anything ready? Not really, no. We need to stall for time.
We had that vulture thing, but that was it, yeah.
Yeah, we don't... The harpoon isn't ready yet. The tank isn't ready for the trap. The heat shields aren't up. So we have to stall for time, and a bunch of our heroes get in those vultures and basically zip around Godzilla like a bunch of gnats on a hot summer day.
Yeah. Let me just sort of fast forward. We know there's a third movie here.
Yeah.
So
Godzilla will be fine.
This feels pretty futile at this point. All of the scrambling and all of like the rushing against time. It was a little tiresome this time around.
Yeah, well, because it's the same plan.
Yeah.
We're trying to kill Godzilla the exact same way, and it won't end the same way, but we're still trying to accomplish the same thing for a long period of time, and that can't be anything but tedious at this point. The wrinkles that emerge from it are when they capture Godzilla, they put him in the nanobot metal thing, and then they shoot out his dorsal fin, and they plunge the harpoon in him, and they set up the EMP, and they're like, great, now he's going to explode. Anytime now.
Oh, is he now?
Oh, shit, he is not exploding, but he is getting hotter, and he's getting hotter, and he's starting to melt Godzilla City, but he is not exploding. This is his defense against this. We did not plan for this, and we're all going to die if we don't leave because he's going to melt us. And when we try to shoot him from afar, all the things we shoot melt. So we're fucked. And that's when the Bellasaluto talked to the humans, Haruo and Yuko, and one of the other Bellasludans. They're in the vultures, and they're flying around Godzilla.
Which is really reminiscent of those little dog fighting pods. Right? Like,
yeah.
It's a new thing, but visually it's the same.
It's very similar. But their plan is, hey, listen, if we go up into the stratosphere and dive bomb it.
Like a
kamikaze run. We can pierce through the shield and we will die, but we'll last long enough that we can kill Godzilla.
Hmm.
There's just one problem. There's one part of the vulture that can't take that heat. And it's the organic part. It's human.
Yeah.
So they, against their will, start infecting the humans with the nanotech so that they'll be
protected. Yeah.
Yeah, but they don't want it. And Yuko starts screaming in horror and pain. And now our hero has to decide, do I want to defeat Godzilla if it means sacrificing my humanity?
Mm.
And sacrificing someone else's humanity against their will. And so this is the part where it gets interesting again, because now this is at least an
ethical dilemma.
Interesting ethical dilemma.
It's a little not really relatable ethical dilemma. But
no,
yeah.
And it kind of just feels like... It just doesn't feel very Godzilla-y. It feels like it just kind of became like a different sci-fi story for a little while, and it doesn't really connect to the Godzilla stuff very much.
Like I've said, what I like about this series is actually how sci-fi it skews, because it takes place in the distant future. We're dealing with time on a longer scale, and I like science fiction stories that deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
Things that kind of look way, way into the future.
Reckon with that, too.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I'm so fond of Douglas Adams, if you've ever read the Hitchhiker's books. They catch up with characters who have been like there's a robot character who just can't die because it's a robot. Yeah. And it just
so when they end up in the future, like 100,000 years in the future, he's still around.
It's like, what have you been doing, walking in a circle? It's like, for 100,000 years, I was fine until you showed up. Like, it's...
I love that.
We're kind of dealing with tech, like the actual echoes of human technology on a broad scale, and I like that.
And we are to be fair, talking about evolution a lot.
Yeah,
the evolution of the planet, evolution of these humans that survived.
And of the monsters themselves, they're actually a lot different. The idea that...
I guess it does connect.
Godzilla is not just like a stumpy, beady-up kind of guy, but now can heat himself to the point of just melting Mechagodzilla. That's a new wrinkle, and sure, why not? And what happens when a mountain becomes the same heat as the sun?
Here's something
very briefly.
Here's something, and again, you've seen this, and I haven't, so I don't know how I know like based on like some cultural osmosis, a few things that happen in the next movie, but I don't really know how or in what context.
Yeah, it's been a second, so I can't tell you details.
It seems that King Ghidorah shows up, and I'd be surprised if Mothra doesn't show up, but I don't know that, so I'm just making an educated guess. What was I going with this? I had a point.
Evolution monsters.
There's something that is missing from this movie that even like some of the other movies where Godzilla isn't like a character. Like he was in like sort of the late Showa era, where he had like his own personality and dialogue sometimes. But like, you know, when Godzilla, even if he is a rampaging beast, most Godzilla movies have Godzilla as, if not a character, that at the very least an entity that wants something. You know, it has some function in nature.
Yeah.
It has something that it's mad about, or it's defensive about something. And
in most of them, one of the things I like about Shin Godzilla is that we don't get that.
And that's an exception. I'm not saying it's unilateral, but mostly Godzilla has a personality or a purpose in nature or something. Other than kind of vaguely saying that, like, Godzilla shows up when a species gets too big for its britches.
Yeah.
It's still around 20,000 years later. It did that job.
Yeah. What does it want now?
What does Godzilla want? Like, what's in it for Godzilla? What does Godzilla... I realize it doesn't necessarily have a complex inner life, but it has to want something. Like,
the impression, lots of
animals want to breed, some animals whatever, you know?
I think given how little we've been talking about Godzilla the monster about these two movies, and again, and we're going to do it again in the third, is that Godzilla doesn't have that. Doesn't have a personality. Doesn't know. We don't know what it wants. And right. in fact, because Godzilla is so large and so ancient at this point,
mm-hmm.
and because of the design of Godzilla, we don't have like big expressive eyes. Godzilla is yeah. practically made of rock. In this
yeah,
way.
It's like a living statue at this point. Yeah.
Godzilla is barely alive at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like in Shin Godzilla, it doesn't really have any kind of thought processes it's following.
Mm-hmm.
It's now kind of aged into a piece of nature. It moves around like a force of nature, but it doesn't think or want anything.
Well,
that is kind of cool in this, you know, old-fashioned sense of the word of awesome.
Yeah.
Where it just sort of...
makes you just
kind of strikes you and you know, put your hand on your chest. This thing moves and it's, you know, the mountain is alive. That part is kind of cool, but at the same time, yeah, we're going to be missing Godzilla as an animal. Godzilla is now like a stone.
And I would even argue to a degree that although the Godzilla and Shin Godzilla didn't seem to have much agency to speak of, it did have a purpose. It was trying to evolve.
Yeah.
In order to survive on this planet. And that was the whole point of the last shot. It was, you know, we're its predators. It started evolving to be more like us.
Yeah.
And here the world's been evolving.
Which is really like, freaky.
Still a fucking scary image. And I still can't believe the first time I watched it, I forgot about that image. My God. But in any case, Godzilla has been evolving for a long time. And now that the humans are back, is it like Highlander 2 rules where now there's like... more Highlanders, and so if I kill them, I become immortal again, and it kind of restarts the clock on that. It's like, now that humans are back, it wants to kill more humans. Is that what it wants? What I'm wondering, and again, don't if you remember this, don't tell me. Let's save it, because it's just going to be next week. Haro has had to do a lot of growing up in a very short period of time. He had lost his grandfather. He became disillusioned with, you know, the government. He became like a terrorist, and then he became a military leader. And then he destroyed Godzilla, and then was destroyed by Godzilla. And then he found out humanity is still alive on this planet, but now they've evolved in this weird fucking way. And then he had to decide to basically kill off an entire alien species because they tried to like turn humans into nanotech, and thus ironically saving Godzilla. Is Haruo gonna have to come to an understanding with Godzilla? Is this like the evolution of Haruo? Is that like when, because come on, King Ghidorah has got to show up, right? Wouldn't it be fucking weird if they had that like post-credit sequence and he didn't? So let's say King Ghidorah shows up. Let's just take that for granted for a moment. I'm going to assume that that's probably true. King Ghidorah is a bigger threat than Godzilla. That's how they always sell him, and that's how they're selling him here. Is Haruo going to have to team up with Godzilla? Is he going to have to come to the conclusion that Godzilla has a function? Is maybe Godzilla's function now that humanity is so powerful... to protect Earth from other monsters? Is that not a function Godzilla serves? Because he did destroy all the other monsters, it seems. At least all the big ones.
Why did Godzilla show up in the first place? To destroy humanity? To retake the Earth?
The common theory, as they say even in this movie, is we built irradiated shit and it mutated stuff and Godzilla emerged from that. But that's it, basically.
Like, we're punished for our arrogance.
Our dominance over
nature. Our dominance over nature. Pretty simple theme. We see that in a lot of science fiction stories. But at the same time, Godzilla is a horror movie.
It's a monster movie, in some cases.
It's a big monster movie.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, like, Godzilla came here... and the Earth was retaken by plants. I'm reminded of that sequence from Creepshow, the one with Stephen King in it.
Oh, yeah.
Where he finds the meteor that lands on Earth, and it, like, makes plants grow everywhere, like including moss. On his skin, and he turns into this, like, moss man, and, like, seeps into his brain and makes him go insane.
Yeah, it's a loose adaptation of The Color Out of Space. Very similar, yeah.
To me, I think it's just random that Godzilla is this unthinking thing from space. Or a force of nature. Like, it kind of grew out of radiation.
Right.
And has reached the point where it's just taken over the planet as, like, an invasive species.
Mm-hmm.
And...
so it's like a parasite.
Yeah, and it has nowhere to evolve other than to just get larger.
Okay, so Godzilla is like Earth's cancer.
Yeah, Godzilla's like a bit of a disease that they can't cure. And I feel like everybody who is butting up against this thing is assuming that it has a purpose or a function, that it is an enemy, when really it is just a thing that is has infected the Earth and they don't know how to destroy.
There's a certain profundity to that. There's a certain, sometimes a Godzilla is just a Godzilla, you know? But there's such, that flies in the face of how...
Keep in mind, and maybe I'm saying this because I'm a big Werner Herzog fan, but Herzog has made film after film about how man is powerless in the face of nature.
Sure, and that's not an uncommon theme amongst a lot of artists.
Yeah, however arrogant we think we are, the natural world will get us.
Yeah.
There's a sequence in A Gear of the Wrath of God where they're on a raft and it gets stuck in this one place and they keep like sending people out to rescue them and they get caught and the final shot of that sequence is they're all dead on the raft.
Right.
Like the river just got them. I think that that sort of sense of humankind's futility in trying to defeat something as powerful as the natural world will only end in ruin.
Right. Well, but, that, but then you have a point, though. Then that, that's not random. Then that does have a thematic underpinning that's significant.
But it's all on humans, is my point. Godzilla isn't... Godzilla's just sort of... The indifferent
Godzilla's a Rorschach test.
Well, it's more like the indifferent Lovecraftian gods. The Lovecraftian gods are so big and powerful they don't care about
us. We're anathema to them. They don't give a shit. I feel like what you're talking about though, and it's interesting to me because, you know, I'm all about sort of challenging, you know, conventional thought about art, but we keep coming back to the same basic principles because.
Of who we are and what we know.
Because of kind of how we function just as human beings. Like, on a very basic level, one of the things that defines human thought, in a very general way, not everyone does this in the same level, but we make connections between things. And this can be very, like, very mechanical. We, like, can use this idea to create tools. I have a concept of a tool.
Kick the table, sorry.
Stop doing that. We have a concept of the tool, we can build that tool, we can improve our lives. But this goes beyond that, and this is how we form things like philosophy and religion. We look at the world around us and we try to imagine, well, that's there for a reason, right? There's got to be something connected, and we try to find some sort of logic to it. And if there isn't like a scientific or mechanical logic, we find a philosophical or thematic logic. And this is how we approach art as well. We don't just look at, you know, what is a movie if not a series of images, right? We don't just see a series of images, we connect them. It's called persistence of vision. So we form these images into something that logically makes sense in a chronological context. And that we do that with themes as well. We see a concept explored in a narrative, and then we make connections to things within the narrative and say, how does this justify it? And oftentimes this comes in a form of a value system. You know, this movie is about this topic, you know, nuclear proliferation or whatever. Is it saying it's bad? Is it saying that what caused it is something that we can learn from? We're constantly trying to find connections between every element of the material.
Yeah.
So when we look at Godzilla, either within the universe, the characters within it, or as an audience, we're trying to think of some reason why we're looking at Godzilla. Either some reason why Godzilla exists or some reason why we made a Godzilla movie. And surely it's not just to do stuff today. It's a lot of effort to just do stuff. There must be a reason. And that reason may even be subconscious. So
what you getting at here?
I guess what I'm looking at is what you're talking about here is if you think of Godzilla as just this completely random chaos element... That flies in, that to imagine it not meaning anything is difficult for me to wrap my head around because it flies in the face of what I consider human nature.
Okay.
To find deeper meaning in things, or at the very least to find connections between things.
Well,
so I'm intrigued by that, but I find that very, very difficult.
Well, I think it's just a bleak part of human nature. Mm. We are infected with a certain arrogance. And that's something that runs through a lot of Godzilla movies. We think we're smart enough to get him. And we're not, because Godzilla is more powerful than that. Whatever weapon we invented, it's not going to work.
Well, it's really... when you start making sequels, it doesn't work. And first time we actually did do it quite well, that was the whole point.
But at the same time, that wasn't about arrogance. It was about, yeah, we have the power to do this, and that's fucked. That we as a human species can invent a weapon that powerful.
I guess my point is, if you remove the sequels from the equation, and if the movie had, original movie had just been allowed to be the original movie, we would not be having this conversation about Godzilla. It would mean something else.
Yeah. So I think that's just a continued theme into this one. The idea that Godzilla is a force of nature, that even if we are teamed up with space aliens... and we have nanotechnology, 20,000-year-old mecha Godzilla technology that we can infuse into our bodies and pierce through Godzilla's skin, Godzilla's still going to be stronger than that.
But do you see my point, though, about how, like, we take what we see and we try to ascribe meaning to it? Like, again, the fact that there are sequels, which means that Godzilla can't be killed, has now become part of this sort of ethos, or this conceptualization of what Godzilla represents now. And that's just because it keeps existing for capitalist reasons. Let's be frank here. They're making money off these Godzilla movies.
And it's no different from other series. Like, well, you and I grew up in the 1980s when there were a lot of slasher movies. Those villains never died.
Yeah.
They just were back in the next one, sometimes without explanation. They just kind of came back.
And when there was an explanation, it was usually nonsense.
Yeah, the plotting for a lot of those resurrections.
Oh, yeah, so we killed Freddy Krueger, but then a dog peed on him, and now he's awake.
Peed fire on
him. Oh, yeah, I remember when that dog peed fire on Freddy Krueger, and now he's awake. That's all the explanation we got, by the way.
Was that Dream Child?
I think that was Dream Master, actually, because didn't he end up in, like, the...
He's in the junkyard.
I think he's in the junkyard at the beginning of that one. I'm a little hazy on it. It's one or the other, though. It's definitely 4 or 5.
I mean, he does live in dreams, so it's okay if those.
But it was his real corpse, though, that it peed on, because that was the whole point of the third film.
Oh, that's right, they found his bones.
That's how we defeat him, is we find his actual corpse and we lay him to rest. And then when a dog pees fire on him, I guess that's not restful. I'm up now. I was gonna sleep, but damn it. Okay, fine. Now I'm mad.
When you start looking at those films, like even like Jason or Freddy movies or Michael Myers movies, you look at those on sort of the macro. You take them as a whole. All of a sudden, you have a villain that cannot die.
Exactly.
And either you have to explain why he cannot die in a logical sense.
Yeah.
Which they always try to do and fail because it's terrible. Jason got away with it because they just staggered forward and made it up as they went along.
In Jason 6, they finally just said, fuck it, he's magic.
Yeah.
And then they got away with it fine. And I loved, David Cronenberg had a line in Jason X that kind of took it all. He can't die, and that's scientifically fascinating. Yeah. That's it. That's all we know.
his cells magically regenerate. Yeah, we don't know why.
He's Wolverine if he was just a serial killer.
But,
boom.
But he grows back into, like, a shambling mound. Like, he doesn't turn back into a person.
He's always
scarred up and all gross and damp.
I do like that whole thing where, like, he's constantly wet after a while. Because he drowned, so he's constantly wet.
I always thought he was, like, leaking pus. So that was, like... Yeah. Probably smelled terrible.
Did you ever see The Living Dead at the Manchester Morgue? It's something that's called Let Sleeping Corpses Lie.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It's a zombie film from the 2000s, but it was made in that period, like, between Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, where the rules hadn't been, like, universally accepted yet. And one of the conceits was that however you died when you're, like, a zombie, you're still kind of like that. So if you drowned, you're constantly wet.
Okay.
So that's basically Jason Voorhees rules. Yeah.
Point being, when you take all of the films at once, you have this undying creature. What's the theme of something that can't die, that wants to kill? Well, obviously, it's a symbol for death.
The unstoppable nature of,
in most cases, they refer to these things as evil.
Yeah.
How evil persists, and we can defeat it temporarily, but evil will always come back. And when you start to think about that, that's a really bleak message that these films are teaching. It's like you as teenagers, you're supposed to relate to the human characters, these young people who are able to overcome their fears and be really resourceful and clever and defeat evil. But it just comes back. You have to keep on working at it. Sometimes it's the same person has to kill the monster multiple times.
On the other hand, though, you could also look at that from the other perspective, which is that evil may not be able to die, but it is constantly defeated.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have to remain ever vigilant, and, you know, we will occasionally lose some of the hornier teenagers, but generally speaking, we will always defeat it after it goes on a really short killing spree.
But then there's, evil will always be defeated, but the people who are dead are always going to be dead, to that same token. So after a while, how many people has Jason killed?
Well, like, by Jason X, it's in the thousands.
Yeah, a couple hundred by his own hand, and then he blows up like a city in space and kills like thousands and thousands of people.
I'm pretty sure Jason has the highest kill count of any.
Well, just because of that one in Jason X.
Not counting Godzilla, like the ones that destroy whole cities on the regular. So, I think Jason Voorhees is the slasher villain with the highest body count.
So yeah, one Godzilla film has its own story and its own themes, but the Godzilla series as a whole is about a force of nature that can't be destroyed.
Sure.
And we've said this in previous podcasts, Godzilla is never depicted as really being necessarily good or evil. Like, they see it as destructive and that it's something that needs to be stopped.
Late show era.
Pardon?
Late show era.
Late show era is good. Yeah, he's like a little bit of a hero that like
senses something bad and then's like, we have to save the world, and he does it. Yeah.
But there are many, many Godzilla films where
the majority really.
Yeah. They look at if Godzilla's being hurt, they're kind of distressed, and the destruction is actually distressing unto itself.
Right.
And the idea is we can't really blame Godzilla.
Mm.
Godzilla doesn't aim to hurt us necessarily. Godzilla is just hurting because that's Godzilla's nature. Mm-hmm. And that's like a little bit more of a pragmatic view of this gigantic destructive animal. Mm. It's just doing what a giant destructive animal does.
Yeah.
How do we fight a god of destruction when that's its nature? Like, we can't convince it to do something else.
Yeah, but we can coexist with it when it's like this. Yeah, so there's we gotta do something.
Yeah.
And that's...
So yeah, we're
your
just...
hair is falling over your face in just such a way.
Sorry,
by the way, it's very handsome, actually. It's a good look.
Right.
Hey, I wish you hadn't smoothed it over. We're taking a picture and said, do this on purpose. I love recording in person just because we get to have those little moments. Anyway,
and I get to ramble a little bit more.
That's true. I don't know. Maybe no one else notices or cares. I feel like our rapport is a little bit more natural when we're in person and we can like sort of read each other's cues. Since I moved last year, we used to live like within a couple of blocks of each other and we record together all the time because it was super convenient. And now it's like 50-50.
Yeah.
We record in person whenever we can, but it's not always convenient. So we record online sometimes. And I don't know. I've been told that most people can't tell the difference, but I always can tell. And I just like having you around, buddy.
Oh, thank you.
And I like our Godzilla show. And it bums me out that we're almost done with our Godzilla show, but we do have several episodes left, and we are already talking about what's going to come after Thank Godzilla, It's Friday. So stick around. Yeah. We haven't finalized that plan yet, but we're narrowing it down. We have a bunch of ideas. But in any case, that is Godzilla sitting on the edge of battle.
Yeah, and we mentioned the post-credits cookie where they tease King Ghidorah. Yeah. So
And the very ending was our hero who has saved Godzilla, much against his own nature, in order to prevent humans from being taken over by nanobots. But Yuko, who was being in the process of being taken over by nanometal, he like lands his vulture and he pulls her out and she's like crying nano tears, but she's like, I don't know if she's dead or comatose or whatever, but she's not well. And he's like very sad and crying, and we hear him crying over the credits, and it's very intense. So that's where we're at. And next time on Thank Godzilla, It's Friday, we will talk about the conclusion of the anime Godzilla trilogy, Godzilla the Planet Eater. So my Galactus comparison just keeps getting stronger.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that in the next episode of Thank Godzilla, It's Friday. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for joining us. It's meant the world to us that you've been with us on this journey. And again, we have, I don't know, about a half dozen more movies to go, give or take.
Not very many. We got a MonsterVerse.
Mostly MonsterVerse. But we still have to do Godzilla Minus One as well, which I'm excited about.
Which we reviewed kind of recently.
But we get to like really delve.
Do a little bit of a deep dive.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, we will go through Godzilla X Kong, even though we reviewed that recently and critically acclaimed, if you want to jump ahead to that. But we tried to keep that review a little on the brief side because we knew we'd have to dedicate a whole episode of this to it later. So we'll really delve into it in all great detail as the capper. And one day when this episode, when this podcast has run its course, the next time there's a Godzilla movie, we'll bring it back.
Yes.
We will do a special episode of Thank Godzilla It's Friday to cover whatever the next Godzilla movie is. Because there will be one eventually. But anyway, again, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. If you want to talk about anything we discussed in this episode, our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. Whitney, what is your P.O. Box?
Send us a physical letter to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Yes, and we're going to do an episode of that real soon. So get your emails in. Or your physical letters. We'd love to get them. A huge shout out to all of our patrons over at patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. Our patrons get episodes of Thank Godzilla It's Friday 1 week early, and they get all of our new podcasts ad-free.
Yeah.
And at other tiers, you get a bunch of other bonus shows, including our Star Trek podcast, All Our Yesterdays, where you can hear the episode in which I say The City on the Edge of Forever is not a good Star Trek episode.
You do argue that it's a good, like, Outer Limits type of an episode.
I think the problem with the episode is that it actually contradicts many of the themes that Star Trek is very importantly based on. But we talk about that in that episode if you want to listen to that. But we're in the middle of Star Trek Next Generation, so there's so many episodes of that. We did a commentary track for Highlander 2. We're getting ready to do a commentary track for one of the allegedly the worst movies ever made, Nuki. Which is very exciting to me, and we're currently.
I rewatched Nuki recently.
I watched it for the first time. It's not very good.
It's a fucking chore. It is.
That's gonna be a hell of a talk. But anyway, we'll get into the weeds with Nuki, and also we're working on the next episode of Only the Best International.
Yes.
Where we're gonna review every single film that was nominated for Best International Feature, the first year that was an Academy Award category with 5 nominees. So we're going to be talking about 5 films, and many of which people don't talk about very much anymore. Yeah. So it's a really cool deep dive, and I can't wait to get into that. I'm really excited. So again, thank you everybody for joining us. Thank you for being cool. You're awesome. We're on social media, @CriticAcclaim. I'm @WilliamBibiani.
I'm @WhitneySeibel.
And until next time, keep on roaring. Rawr.
Keep on roaring. Love Godzilla.